Blog Talk Radio.
To drive through HR. Paul, brother, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right, sir. How's your world?
You know, it's good, man. It's good. I had a quick trip up to Boston yesterday, and I was really kind of fearing it. With all the northerners talking about the weather for the last couple of months, I was dreading going to Boston, and you know what? It was actually beautiful. I mean, really clear skies, and it was beautiful outside, and just gorgeous all the way around. And so I got in 24 hours later. I got out unscathed, no delayed flights, crazy monsoon, whatever. So man, I'm happy. I feel like I've gotten a reprieve. How about you? How's your world?
We're doing all right here. I had our local Minneapolis Star Tribune had a thing about. Who had like the coldest winter in the country this, you know, for this past one. And there actually is a badge on their website that says, I survived the winter of 2014.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the deal. If you ever hear a Texan talk about how hot it is, you know it's got to be hot. And if you ever hear somebody, really a northerner, but somebody that lives in Chicago or Minneapolis or whatever, and they're complaining about the snow, It's got to be at an epic level. I mean, it wasn't just a bad. It probably doesn't help, though. We've had a couple mild winters. You know, it's kind of like lulled us into, okay, this is the new normal. You know, it'll be nice. Well, it's not that bad. And then this is the winter that said, no, you people have forgotten. You've forgotten. Here it is. Have a nice day.
I told somebody the other day that, you know, global warming had been good for Minnesota until these last two winters. And then I don't know what happened, but we got through to this deal.
Yeah, not cool. Well, how's work, man? What's top of mind for you these days? What's keeping you up at night?
Everything's keeping me up at night. It's trying to find enough IT folks for the startups here in town. There's a press release that went out today. I've been volunteering with Minsky, with the Minnesota State College and University System, and we just created a new application development degree program so that we can try to fill some holes, the whole talent shortage, the whole we don't have the folks with the right skills. So the Minsky System created a new four-year degree program that involves a mandatory internship. And so it's kind of a new thing for us in the Midwest. Seen some of it on the coast, but hopefully we can start putting some more folks into the IT field here over the next year.
did you see Tim Sakic's post about STEM and about not being able to find enough IT folks? Did you happen to catch that over the last couple of days?
I did not catch. I saw it on the bookmark, but I didn't actually look at it.
You know,
I'll do it while you're talking.
Well, what's your general take, and as it relates to STEM and talent? Do you feel like it's just a way to kind of to import people, H-1Bs, to get cheaper, quote unquote, cheaper talent from other places, or kind of, what's your whole take on STEM?
I don't. At least here in Minneapolis, we're not seeing that price. You know, the cost of labor, we're not seeing that push down that maybe others on the coast are seeing. Between our med tech community, which is always a top three in any list for, you know, amount of folks who are in it, the med tech folks can't find who they're looking for, the biotech folks can't. So I think part of it, though, is, and this was part of our mission for this MinSkew thing, creating this internship program, was, you know, companies want to find folks, you know, here in IT, they want to find a 3 or 5 year developer. But they're not hiring these folks, you know, years 0 to 2, as if suddenly someone becomes a 3-year .NET developer magically. And so our idea is for these companies now to say, look, you've been talking about a talent shortage. You've been talking about, you know, recruiting 2020. How about you actually start, you know, get off your ass and hire these folks? I mean, we're trying to find a more polite...
Yeah. Well, do you think that the real fear there is that kind of a fear that's been around for a long time, that if we invest in somebody, we train them, and we kind of stick
Absolutely.
With them, that eventually they just kind of go somewhere else, et cetera?
So we've had folks here say, well, why would I want to hire an intern, teach them, train them, and have them go work for someone else? Okay, I get your fear, but aren't you really saying your retention sucks? Right?
We're so bad at engagement and retention.
So if someone's come and work in your company for 6 months or a year, and they've helped you write code, and they've been sitting in on your meetings, and they know your culture, and they've attended the holiday party, and then they graduate and they don't want to continue working there, I'm thinking there's something wrong with your gig. It's not the student who you've been employed.
How much of that comes down to money? In terms of trading up, if I stay at one place, then if I go to another, then I can get a boost, et cetera.
Well, we're seeing that here. So a recent salary survey here in Minneapolis said that the average IT person was getting a 3.5% increase over last year. And I'm like, well, okay, I would suggest that pretty much anyone in IT in Minneapolis can move at a minimum of 5% for an average of 10, and some are getting 15% increases in pay. So, again, it comes down to, you know, we have companies here who are still paying folks roughly the same salary that they were paying during the recession. You know, we came out of the recession here, IT-wise, March of 2010, so their salaries are 4 or 5 years behind, and, again, they say, well, we can't find who we're looking for. No, you're not willing to pay what the market is bearing right now.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, that's, you know, I think the thing is at the end of the day, if your compensation's not, at least at market, you know, if you're
mm-hmm.
not at market, but if you're trying to aggressively recruit people, my advice to folks has always been, you've got to be above market. You know, and yeah, there's nobody likes that, but the truth is if you can get them in and you can create a great working environment, great benefits, the whole bit, then you'll keep them in retention. Well, you'll really kind of change
mm-hmm.
the dynamic in terms of you retaining them or them leaving, but you got to pay them. I mean, for me at least, it starts with, you know, if someone's really good, and I'm not talking about below average talent and whatnot. I mean, if someone's really good, pay them. Just pay them. Get that out of the way. Take that part off the table. What's your what's your general philosophy on compensation?
Well, part of it is, you know, I have conversations with tech CEOs. I had one this morning, and I said to the guy, why would someone come work for you? Like, why would they leave what they already know? You know, they may like their company. They may not be in love with it. But why would somebody come work for you? And all I had back from this gentleman was a complete blank stare. And I said, this is in part why it is you're having a recruiting issue, because you can't even tell me, and I'm your friend, why somebody should come work for you. You know, so you have to, like, you don't always have to have the best salary. Sometimes it is, what are you building? What's the technology? What's the career path? It could be location. It could be culture. It could be all of those things. You know, salary here in Minneapolis tends to fall third or fourth or fifth on the list of things that people are looking for. But you're right. If what you're building stinks, if you don't have a culture, if you're a jerk to work for, and your salary is below average, look, it's not that we have a skills shortage. It's that your company sucks, and you better find a way to be able to compete. And I hate to be so blunt about it, but it's just true. You know,
yeah, no, that's been my experience too. What do you find candidates using things like Glassdoor or the internet in terms of their research before they take gigs with companies?
You know, I saw that Glassdoor infographic from a week or two ago, whatever it was, that, you know, 90-some percent were looking at some of this. Again, in the startup, small tech companies here in Minneapolis, most folks don't know what Glassdoor is because they're not going to work for Target, Best Buy, 3M, or Wells Fargo. They are doing research, but it's always the word of mouth and a friend to a friend. I mean, I'm seeing it. I'll probably see it on Twitter two or three times in a week where someone will say, hey, do I know anybody who knows somebody who works at, you know, fill in the blank? And that's how they're doing the research. But this is, again, this is a different part of our IT community. This is the tech startup grassroots, like the nerdiest, geekiest, techiest of folks. So they're doing their research. They're just not doing it the way, you know, maybe a marketing professional would go about trying to figure out what's it like to work at Ameriprise.
All right. What's your favorite interview question? What do you like to do when you're talking with candidates? How do you lull them into a into a place where you get the information out that you need to get out, etc.?
Well, you know, you and I had a conversation in Rochester when you were at the Minnesota SHRM event. What was that? The fall of 2012. Mm-hmm. And you may remember you and I had a conversation, and I was feeling a little bit lost about my career path at that point. What was I going to do with my stuff, and did I want to do any speaking, teaching, training? Should I just be a recruiter? I had an existential crisis that year, so I actually told my candidates, like, I just told it to you and a bunch of other people too. The thing that I found at the end of 2012 that I didn't know the answer to was, what did I want? And so I tell almost every candidate that story. And so I say to them, so what do you want? Like, it's just a really honest, open question. And quite frankly, most folks don't have an answer. And that's an okay answer, too. Like, what do you want in a company? What do you want for a career? It may not even be that that's what you want. Maybe this job is going to be a mean to a different end. And, you know, I think that, you know, when I was going to do that 30-day road trip, but I only ended up in Dallas for 10 days, I found that I was spending more time trying to figure out my where I was going to stay and where I was going to, you know, what road was I going to take than I was planning for the first quarter of 2014 for work. I myself wasn't spending my time on what did I want work-wise. So I just ask people, and you get some really cool conversations with folks. I really want to end up doing this, but I know I have to do this other thing first. You know, there's a guy, he's a developer, he wants to be, you know, get into management, and he goes, I just need to start leading some projects. How do I do that? And I'm like, well, the company that we're talking about isn't going to be for you, but I've got something else. I know someone else that I can refer you to. This is going to be a good gig for you. But if I hadn't asked, what did he want? Because he was just assuming that he was giving me the canned phrase. I'm looking for this, that, and everything. I go, but what do you really want? And until we get to that point, I think, you know, our conversations are kind of lame.
How do you suggest companies, at the end of the day, you can find somebody that's really competent, to your point. You look at their resume, LinkedIn, you vetted them, and you're like, this is just the perfect candidate. But that still doesn't solve for fit, you know, getting down inside that organization, working with that manager on that team, in that project, you know, layers and layers and layers of complexity. How do you suggest companies or candidates get to fit, to really understand fit?
When I started focusing on the startups, you know, 15 months ago, what I try to do in my phone screens before the CEO gets to talk to, you know, if it's you, right, you and I are going to have a conversation. It could last an hour, and we're going to ramble like you're used to me doing. And, you know, we're going to talk about the weather and football and March Madness and what are you looking for in a company and all that stuff. When I send you then to the CEO, I say, you know, you don't have to have a culture conversation about the company because we know it's there. But now dig into code, dig into the tech stuff, but figure out, is this person who you need right now and for the next 18 months? But I say it to the candidate, too. Look, I know you want to impress this person. I know you really want this job, or it could be that we're courting them very hard. But really stop and figure out, is this really what you want to be doing, and is this who you want to be doing it with? I just don't think – we're always afraid of the answer being no. So we never actually ask the question. And my idea is just ask the question and get it out of the way.
What types of personalities thrive in startups or don't thrive in startups?
You know, I used to think that there was this idea that you had to just write, if you're a technologist, right, you just write code, you're willing to work 60 to 80 hours a week. But there are startups here in town who they don't want those folks. They want someone who wants work-life balance. They want someone who, when they go home, is going to hang out with the kids because they just want them to put in their 45 or 50 hours and then go home. So I realized here that the startups, even they are red apples and bananas and potatoes. They're not all red apples. They're not all just a tech startup. And I think that that's the part about asking the CEO is like, what do you really want? It's great that you have this 14-item, you know, job description. You know, this is Superman or Wonder Woman. But then you actually say, but do you really want to hire a bunch of Supermen and Wonder Women? You know, can you get away with Clark Kent, you know, instead? Or can you get away with Jimmy Olsen? Because then they start to realize, wow, I don't need a bunch of type A people in my company. There's a guy here in town, we were in a meeting, and he goes, I'm tired of trying to recruit a bunch of arrogant assholes. He goes, I just want to hang out with some good people who want to do some good things. But that's his company. So I don't know if there, at least here in Minneapolis, I don't think there is a formula for that. I thought there used to be. I don't think there is.
Now, you're making some bets here yourself, Paul. So on some level, you're not working with every startup in the region. You've made some decisions. You've met some CEOs. You've met some board members. You've turned down some gigs. I mean, I know how this plays out. How are you making those decisions for whom to work with and whom not to work with?
Part of it is, you know, Minneapolis is a really large, small town. So, you know, we talk about, you know, the whole 6 degrees of separation. You know, I think it's like 2.5 here. And so part of it is that, you know, it's reputations are easy to find. Work histories, you know, is this guy a jerk or not? But there are folks, quite frankly, in the tech community who wouldn't want me to recruit for them because I'm very casual and laid back. It's not to say that I'm unprofessional, but they're used to someone who's really type A and really in your face because that's and aggressive and that's the way they are, but I'm not. But part of it is to figure out who in the tech community has invested in what startups. So I'll follow the tech money within my startup community more than the angel investor or the venture capital money because I'm willing to bet that tech CEO who's been around the block for 15 years who's now put $400,000 into a startup, he kind of knows more than that venture capital does.
What type of what's your bailiwick at this point? You know, you find a candidate. You know, first of all, take me through your sourcing stuff. Are you primarily a LinkedIn guy? Are you a Boolean search guy? Like, first of all, how do you find talent? And then I want to ask you, after you find it, then what do you do to kind of bring it through the funnel? What type of screens and sorts, et cetera, do you use?
I've got a slide that made some folks laugh the other day. I have it's three images on a slide, and it's a picture of my cell phone, a picture of my business card, and, like, two pictures of, like, these, you know, marshmallow dudes shaking hands. That's still how I mostly recruit. So I'm going to tech events. I'm speaking at events. You know, I work, you know, where I'm at right now, I'll post a photo later on. I'm working at a co-working space here in Minneapolis called COCO. It's located in what was our old Minneapolis Green Exchange. And it's now become a tech hub here in the Twin Cities. I still think that we can talk about Boolean search strings and we can talk about LinkedIn. And, you know, I have a social media presence in my town. But at the end of the day, we're still, you know, we're trying to get someone to leave one company to go to another company. And so to me, this is highly personal. So, yeah, I do search strings and I do all those things. But my funnel tends to be referrals, friends of friends, someone who I met at a tech event from 6 months ago who remembers me as that guy, the recruiter guy who posts the sunset photos on Twitter. Like, because no one can pronounce or spell debetting, so my last name is of no use to me, but they'll remember is that Minnesota headhunter guy. And so for me, social media is great, but, you know, I was, who had the, was it SourceCon, right? Jeremy had that post a few weeks ago about can we get rid of social media recruiting, like as a phrase. Look, he's right. Look, recruiting to me has always been social. I was doing this stuff, you know, in 1998. It just happens to be that I have a presence online. I'm not boring. And it allows folks to get to know me. But that's the part of the recruiting process. So when I have conversations with folks, I'll say, hey, you know, how much of me do you need to know about? Most folks will say, well, I already follow you on Twitter, or I see your photos on Facebook. You know, I know you're a Gopher football fan. I don't have to introduce myself that much. So I can immediately get into here's what my company is about or here's what this startup is about. So phone screens, like, so what happens after I have you? So, you know, you and I have introduced somehow. We were probably at a Ruby on Rails event. You came up to me afterwards, William, and you said, you know, I'm looking for a new gig. Also let you know ahead of time, like, we're going to get, like, a 40-minute to an hour conversation probably because I'm going to ramble and you're going to talk about stuff. And then it's just trying to figure out which of the startups, I work with a handful of them, which one do you best fit? And we just start walking you through that company's process. So each process is a little bit different, but it allows us to kind of go through, while the conversations are longer, like me on your show, I'm long-winded, but we save a lot of time on the back end because we ask all the questions we need to up front.
All right, what's your bid on passive versus active, gals and guys?
I think it's a BS argument. Like, I think people just do it because it's fodder to be able to write blog posts and have, like, conversations. Everybody, okay, so the IT unemployment in Minneapolis is less than 2%, has been for 3 years, which is to say everybody has a job for the most part. And so in my mind, everyone has a job. The thing is sooner or later, right, if you have a pool of 100.net folks and you figure they're jumping every 24 months, I know that I have 100 people, four of them are looking every month. I just need to be in front of mind for those, for four folks every month. So I wait for them to come to me. I'll stay in touch with them. I've got an email newsletter. We'll bump into each other at the tech event on April 12th. Sooner or later, everyone's looking. And there's that whole idea of, well, I only want to hire people who are currently employed. That's like the thing, I only want to date people who are married. Like, it's just... William, I got to tell you, man, I see what some of the folks are doing nationally and what they're talking about and these hot item things, and I just think it's a bunch of, mostly it's a bunch of crap. I really do. Like, this is just a worn out, tired argument. But, now, I'm not saying that you're, don't take that the wrong way, of course, but
No. Everyone's talking. I feel the same way. Here's my bit on it. It's treatment. So what the deep irony is that HR treats these characters differently. In the case of a passive candidate, the general treatment is we're gonna dazzle you and amaze you and show you what a great company we are. So please come join us. When someone's an active candidate, they ship all that off to the side, and it's basically they force the candidate, prove to us how amazing you are. So that maybe you'll be worthy enough to join our company. And so it's, I mean, everyone at some point or another, your point is well taken. Everyone's always looking for a job, but it's the way that, perception-wise, it's the way that people are treated. Like, we should always be trying to dazzle the candidate. You know, and in a perfect world, you know, we should always be trying to dazzle them and say, man, our management team's on point. Look at Glassdoor. We have great ratings. We have great reviews. We train the heck out of people. You know, folks never leave. You know, like, we should be doing that regardless on whether or not they're an active, passive, or veteran, or disabled, or pick something. All that stuff doesn't even matter. We should be treating them the same way. We should be trying to woo them, and we don't. In practice, you know, you and I both know we don't do that.
I think one of my frustrations, too, is that we try to make our company sound out like it's the Garden of Eden. Look, most of our companies have, right, let's be honest, most of our companies in some form also suck. It could be our benefit package. It could be our salary. It could be that we've hit the recession, kicked our tail, and we haven't fully recovered yet. You know, so so when I'm doing my work with my clients, I always say, why would someone not want to come work here? And they tell me, and I say, just so you know, I'm going to tell this to the people that I'm recruiting. And they look at me really weird. Like, I'm like, this is not a perfect place. There is no perfect place to go to work. So why don't we let them know what the issues are? Maybe they will actually embrace those and want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So
I think you're – that's a better way. The more honesty, the more transparent, and it's almost like the negative sale. I'm going to tell you about all the flaws, all the warts, where the bodies are buried. And you know what? If you're still interested, fantastic. If you're not, guess what? It's better to scare you off now than for you to get on, get in there for a month or two, and become really, really disenchanted or feel like you were lied to, worse than that. Listen, we've got about 4 minutes left. I want to ask you thereabouts, and you don't have to give precise stuff, but how do you get paid? Like, what's your model? What's your monetization strategy?
So I dumped much to the my search firm friends here in Minneapolis. They're calling me a fool. That's fine, but I'm less stressed now. Most of the startups that I'm working with have been funded for $1 million or less, which is to say they can't pay that 25% or 30% or a 20% search fee. So they also don't need full time recruiting. Some of them just need someone to continually be bird dogging folks for them. So I'll give them X dollars per month. And so some months, some weeks you might be working 10 hours a week, and some weeks on the good weeks when you have to do 6 offers, you're working 35 or 40 hours a week. And so what I'm doing is I'm spreading it out amongst a handful of groups. I will on occasion take on a contingent search. And so, the pushback from friends has been, well, you're cheapening your product, or you're cheapening yourself with these companies. And I say, well, look, these companies will never work with a search firm anyway. They just can't. And if we don't help these search firms get along, or if we don't help these startups get along, then we're all going to have to work for these Fortune 500 companies as clients forever, and I'm tired of that too. It allows me, though, to make it so that all I have to do is recruit, which is what I do best, which is what is the most fun for me. So I'm not constantly going out and trying to find new clients. I'm not having to compete with 6 other firms for a contingent deal. I'm back to billing what I was before. I took a bit of a hit last year to make this transition, but plus that, I want to go fishing when it finally warms up. I'm looking for my own work-life balance.
Well, I get it, man. Where are you going to be? It's about two minutes left to the show. Where are you going to be this year? Are you out on the road? Are you taking any grand vacations, etc.?
I'm going to get out a few times. Well, I was just down in Dallas, and unfortunately we didn't hook up, but college recruiter Stephen Rothbard is going to be at LinkedIn headquarters at the beginning of May, so I'm building a trip around that, so I'm going to go hang out with them for a day. There's some talk about maybe doing a couple of presentations this fall at some HR events, and of course I'll do one for Minnesota Sherm again too. But I expect that I'm going to spend most of my time in Minneapolis working. Maybe doing some more online webinars and training stuff, but man, I want to go fishing, man. This winter's been a bear. So, when the ice is off and it's warm enough to get on a boat, like, you're going to see lake life as a hashtag much more than recruiter life as a hashtag.
Well, done deal, my friend. It was absolutely wonderful talking with you. I'm sorry we missed each other, while you were down in Dallas. But we will somehow find a way to get together this year. Thanks to everyone for listening to Drive Through HR. Everyone, please have a wonderful weekend at TGIF. And thanks again, Paul. Have a great afternoon, brother.
Take care, Frank.
All right, buddy.